Now, this is Derek Warren here interviewing Delane Donaldson of the Effingham County Cultural Center and Museum. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much for allowing me the privilege of being up here. So,
yeah, well, I always learn something new whenever you come in, and it's always nice. The last time it was about the courthouse cannon out there, mm-hmm. and so and we're getting a bit more statewide here, but a local flavor on it as well. So.
Right.
It was about the monument that just got named up in Springfield, correct?
Yeah, before I get to that, though, I want to make this comment. When we were talking last time about the cannon, I think it was just a couple of days later, a fellow came in, and he said, hey, I want to talk to you about that cannon out there. He said, I heard the program. He said, that was very interesting stuff. Then I say, I think it was about a week or so after that, a lady came. She was visiting here from the Evansville, Indiana area. And she said, hey, I really like that program. She said that was talking about the cannon. And I said, you heard this program? He said, oh, yeah. She said, I listen faithfully to WCRC, WCRA.
Yeah, Effingham Radio. It's got a large range on it. Yeah,
yeah. So I was rather amazed by that. And she said, so then she started talking, and I knew that she had listened very attentively. You know, she's talking a lot of the details that we had last time. Now, the thing that I want to focus on today, though, is a different kind of story. Now, the attitude that I always take toward local history, have always taken when I was teaching on a regular basis, was that when it comes down to the final result, all history is local history. And that is that local people, people in the little places, little towns, out in the countryside, as well as the big cities, are the people who then have the stories that you put them all together and you have the story of a nation or of the world. And so I think this is so very true when we look at any of the major events. I think most of the time we think of that sort of a connection when we think of especially the military, yeah. and connections to events like World War II or World War I or the Korean War or the wars in the Middle East.
Anything war-oriented, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we usually think of that as this international connection, and because we all know people who are like that. Now, one of the things that I used to teach sociology also, and one of the things I used to mention in sociology was the fact that most analysts say that each and every one of us in the Western world is no more than four acquaintanceships away from anybody else. That is, that you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, yeah. and then you pick a person in the world and there's a connection that could be made there. Now, I think a lot of us have kind of sensed that in traveling, because I don't know how many times we've been out someplace, you know, and I will say, I remember when my wife and I got married, for instance, back in 1966. We were heading west on our honeymoon. We were out in the Oklahoma area, and we pulled into this little roadside diner, and the waitress came over, and she said, where are you kids from? And I said, well, we from a little bitty town in southern Illinois. She said, well, where? I said, Effingham. She said, the place where the fire took place. You know, in 1949 that happened, and she was remembering it. In 1966.
The historical events that kind of tie places together.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and so those are the connections that are out there that we kind of bump into sometimes. I remember we're traveling on the Natchez Trace one day, and we pulled off a little roadside place in Natchez Trace, and a lady said to us, why don't you to sign her a guest book, and I signed the guest book and put down Effingham. She said, oh, I know a fellow from Effingham, Illinois. She said, he worked on the pipeline with my brother. And she said, do you know Jay Walker? And I said, I've known Jay Walker since I was a kid. All right. Now, see, one connection. So that was just one person, one connection there. All of a sudden connect me with this lady in Mississippi.
Right.
And so one of the things that we have a sense of, I think, always is that whenever we look at the events, especially within the state, that there oftentimes is that very direct connection that can be made between where we live and an event that took place elsewhere. 3 weeks ago, I think it was, that President Biden came to Illinois and commemorated a new monument in Springfield. He had signed the document on that just a few days before. And he talked about the Springfield race riot. And one of the speakers at that event I saw in the news said, this is a dirty little secret, I think, that Springfield has. And I thought to myself, I thought, secret? Was that a secret? I don't know if that was a secret. I taught about it when I was teaching high school.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought, okay, now am I confused? I'll go back and I'm going to look this up. So I went through all my teaching materials. I got all kinds of stuff there at home. And so I found a book that the state of Illinois had presented in 1970. And the superintendent of public education had done that. And he said, here are the events we would like for you to talk about as you deal with race relations within our state. One of them, he emphasized in that booklet, was about the Springfield race riot. So then I thought, okay, now, what about textbooks I was using? I've got quite a collection of history textbooks at home, some of them going back to the 1840s.
Wow.
And so I thought, okay, now, most history, as people think of it, is political history. And the way that textbooks used to be written was that they all focused on political history rather than social history. So I thought, okay, now, if I go back to my high school history book that I used as a student when I was in high school, I open it up, nothing, and I graduated in 1961. So this book was written in the 50s, in other words. When I go back and look at that, no mention of Springfield race riot.
Yeah, I don't remember talking about it in school either. I mean, it maybe for a day or so.
Well, it would have been just a little, like a footnote kind of thing inside a history textbook. Okay, and you might recall this if you think back on it. But so I went then to the history book that we used at the high school at the beginning of the 1970s. And in that book, then, I found reference to the Springfield race riot, 1908. And it also mentioned then that the NAACP was established as a direct result of that Springfield riot.
Oh, wow. Now, everybody knows that.
Everybody knows when that, you know, that founding that took place back there, 1909 is when that happened, see?
Okay.
And so there's this connection that was there because people started wondering within the country, okay, now, because race riots used to be kind of a commonplace event, and the like. But so in the early 1970s, now this is after the Civil Rights Movement, in other words, in the United right. States in the 60s. So then history books started to say, well, we're going to put in social history as well as political history, because there's a direct connection that can be made there always.
Yeah,
of
there's
course.
equal reaction to whatever happens.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, you know. And so then I got out a book that I used in the early 1980s as a history textbook, and sure enough, there's a story. I went to the beginning of the 1990s, and sure enough, there's a story about the Springfield race riot. So now I thought, okay, now it was not a real big secret because I remember talking about it
right.
in Effingham High School, you know, and it was in the textbooks at that time period. So obviously the speaker had to be referencing something else that was different from the fact that nobody knew about it. I think she thought that maybe her thought would have been probably, you know, that we kind of forgotten about it. We all know the NAACP, but do we know how, you know, what was the thing that spurred it on, what brought it into existence? So I thought about that, and well, this is kind of interesting. Now, let's see. Now, okay, we have that in our textbooks. It's been in textbooks for a long time now. What do we know locally? Was there a connection between Effingham, Illinois, Effingham County people, and what was taking place in Springfield in 1908? Now, first decade of the 1900s, there were a number of major race riots that took place in the United States. And if you look at these, some of these were really devastating in terms of what occurred. I noticed that one thing that was very interesting to me was there were three Springfields that had race riots that were very damaging. So Springfield, Missouri, for instance, Springfield, Ohio, for instance, Springfield, Illinois. That all
of Midwest, these, actually. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And well, one of the things about race riots is typically race riots always occurred in the North. In the South, the problem was the fact that there were lynchings that took place, not so much race riots. Now, there were race riots in the South, yes, but it was more something that was a Northern kind of event. And so I looked at, and I saw, okay, now Indiana had problems here, and Ohio had problems here, and Maryland had problems here, and, you know, and then there were in New Orleans and, you know, and so on. So I thought, okay, now what happened here in Effingham, Illinois, Effingham County, the people here? Was there a connection? And so got into the newspaper files. I have a couple of historic newspaper subscriptions that I have on my computer. So I got into those, and sure enough, when I got to the Effingham County papers, yes, there are stories about the soldiers from Effingham, National Guardsmen, who went then to Springfield to participate in trying to defuse everything that had led to the riot. And to bring the riot to an end.
Kind of like we said, a reaction to it, more or less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Direct.
Exactly. And so so there were stories that talked about then the troops when they left Effingham, and during the course of the time that they were there for a few days, and then when they came back to Effingham. And the Illinois National Guard Company G was the company at that time.
Okay.
And so here's the background. Here's the situation with reference to that riot. In July, on the evening of July the 4th, 1908, family in Springfield had been to some 4th of July events. And they got home late. It was like around 11 or closer to midnight. They got home. And one of the girls in the family, when she went to get into bed, discovered there was a person in the room. And she screamed, and her dad came, and here was this fellow. And he exited the house real quick, and dad chased after him, caught him. And this was a white family. And so when he caught him, the gentleman he had been catching was a black fellow, and that gentleman then stabbed the white guy to death. And so there was a murder, and the man was, the suspect was then caught and put in jail. And so this was the next day then, on the 5th of July, that that all of that took place, and the jailing of this man took place. And so then there was just a time of keeping him in jail until the trial would take place. He was still in jail when we get into August, into the middle of August. And when we get into the middle of August, there was an event that took place in Springfield where a white woman claimed that she had been assaulted by a black male. And she gave descriptions of him, and a suspect was tracked down. He seemed to fit the description that the woman had given. And so he was put in jail. Now, there was the whole climate in 1908 in the United States, generally speaking, was one of tension economically. There had been a depression that hit in the United States in 1907, the panic of 1907, you may have talked about in history books, okay? So the panic of 1907 had taken place. It didn't affect Springfield in terms of jobs very much, but all of the surrounding communities around Springfield had really suffered from this depression that had hit. So we get into 1908. They're starting to come back, but there's still a lot of tension. Now, whenever there is job tension that takes place, oftentimes the people who have lived in a community for a long time will think new people who have come in, and those oftentimes are immigrant groups, or they are racial groups or ethnic groups, that when they have come in, that the people who live there for a long time think, we should have the jobs first before anybody else. And so there was a tension between, people just going back to work, who's going to be able to get the job and who's not.
Some things really don't change.
Listen, when I, as I was studying this, I'm thinking, this reminds me of something.
Yeah, a bit, yeah.
And so so then all of this tension was there. But there were other kinds of tensions that were taking place as well. This is the era where prohibition is a force. Now, we had not passed the amendment to end the sale of alcoholic beverages in the United States, but there were a lot of prohibitions that took place. In 1908, it was Effingham, the city of Effingham had prohibition that went into effect just for the community. It wasn't the county, but it was in the community. Okay. And so in Springfield, because of the prohibition movement, there were lots of people who lost jobs who worked in the saloons and the bars and so on. And so that was a major problem in Springfield. A lot of those people had lost their jobs. There was also a very great concern over immigration. There was what is called a nativism, the native.
I've heard the
term. It doesn't refer to the Native Americans, but the Native people were saying, we are the first immigrants who landed here, and we don't like all these people who are coming in, especially from Eastern Europe and from Southern Europe. So there was a lot of tension that existed with those ethnic groups there. So that's all part of this scene too. So there's a lot of just undercurrents that are here in the United States.
Right.
And so, and then whenever you get up to the point where then there's some criminal event that takes place with all of the tension that already exists for other reasons.
Just snowballs.
It all of a sudden, it explodes, you know, just an explosion took place. So the people then after this in Springfield, after they had heard about the apparent assault on this woman, then they decided they were going to take the guys out of jail because the fellow who had committed the murder earlier, they wanted him. He was still in jail. And now they had another fellow. Both of these were black in race. And so when they are in jail, then a mob of about 5,000 people, and who can say where they came from, because Sangamon County and surrounding counties up there had unrest job-wise. You know, it wasn't Springfield as such most of the time, but these others. So a lot of them could have been people from outside the Springfield community, but about 5,000 gathered in a mob. This would be in the area close to where St. John's Hospital is in Springfield.
Okay.
And so between 9th Street and 11th Street, and then from about the St. John's area, as I understand it, a little bit south and maybe a little bit to the north, but in between those two boundary markers there. Now, that was an area known as the Badlands, or another neighborhood close by was called the Levee. I've never been able to figure out, maybe some listener will tell me why there was a Levee name given to a neighborhood in Springfield.
Yeah.
That didn't register with me. But the reason why the area was called the Badlands was the fact that this was a location of a lot of brothels. This was a location of a lot of saloons. This was a location of gambling dens. There was a lot of illegal activity took place inside this particular neighborhood. And so it was a place where there was trouble, okay? And it appeared as though, from what I've seen in the reports about this, and I have read a whole lot of them, but the reports say that you know, there was kind of a blind eye turn to these neighborhoods. And it was a rough place to be, but yet it was kind of given just a wink and a nod and everything.
A free pass,
continued.
More or less.
Yeah, that type of thing. That's a good description of it. Okay, so now when most of the residents who lived in the Badlands area had very poor housing. I saw some descriptions that said that the average person had a space about 6 feet by 12 feet for their residence. You know, so and so these are there are just a lot of what we would term shacks, I guess, more than anything else. There were some business places that were a little bit sounder in terms of nature.
Were they separate or were like apartment complexes? Like what?
The description I get is a lot of things that are just really built really close together.
Okay.
So that type of thing. And so when the mob began to gather, their attitude was, we're going to go to the jail, and we're going to take those two fellows out of the jail, and we're going to make them pay right now, one for murder, one for sexual assault. Well, the sheriff of Sangamon County reacted very strongly, put together a force, and he then deputized a lot of people. One of the people that he deputized was a man who owned a restaurant in Springfield. And so he and the sheriff talked it over, and they decided that they would move these two black gentlemen out of the jail and get them to Bloomington in a safer location away from Springfield. They thought for their own safety, because they didn't want a lynch mob to take place there.
Right.
Get them away from here, get them out. And so the gentleman accommodated what the sheriff asked him to do. He was deputized to do such. And so then he hurried these people away from that area where they can get them and lynch them. That irritated the crowd to a great extent. Now, it's at that point, then, it appears, that setting fire to some of these very poorly constructed buildings took place, and then, you know, it was just fire immediately. So the extent of the damage that was done there in terms of number of blocks that were completely destroyed and all that kind of thing, that this was greater than was described for the other riots that had taken place. More deaths elsewhere, But the property damage was much more extensive, it appears, in Springfield in this race riot than had been the case in these other race riots that were taking
place. Is it just because of the location?
And the construction. So the buildings were not well constructed and the like. So in the aftermath of that, then, as the mob just is, and these are, a lot of these are, it appears a lot of them are you know, young men, I mean, teenage years and on upwards. So then instantaneously, the governor responded, and he wanted that National Guard to come to Springfield. And eventually, there are 3,500 guardsmen who went into Springfield. Now, the Springfield population was about 45,000 at that time. So this is a pretty good-sized force to go into, you know, a city that wasn't really that big at that point.
And for a small location, more or less.
Exactly, yeah. And so eventually 3,500 guardsmen were called. So the call came down to Effingham for Company G to move out. This was August the 14th that the call came, and so then a newspaper story in Springfield was printed indicating the time of arrival of all these trains that were coming into Springfield, and you know, when Company G would arrive at 11 o'clock in the morning on Saturday the 15th, you know.
Now, 1900s, that was when trains were the main the main transportation as well, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you couldn't fly anybody in, you know, yeah, anything of that sort. No, the trains were the transportation. And so the trains began to move the people into Springfield. And when the Effingham people got there then, that the mob spirit had been reduced a lot because there were already a lot of guard members there in the city. And so then the Effingham Guard also had a hospital unit with it. There was a doctor, a Walker from Effingham, who then wrote a letter home. As he wrote a letter home, just to tell the people, you know, this is where we are. Let me see, I have with me here this morning, I think, a portion of that. But he wanted to tell the people, now, here is... Here's this from this letter. It occurred to me that the people of Effingham might like to know something concerning Company G and the hospital corps, and as I know the accommodations for letter writing are very poor here, I will ask you to say in the record, that was the name of the newspaper locally, that all are well and happy. There has been little trouble since the 4th Infantry, that's the Effingham unit, arrived with along with the 1st, the 2nd, the 3rd, the 5th, the 7th Squadron of Cavalry, Gatling Section. You know, so this was a high-powered thing we had here, and they had a whole lot more units than that. But as he talked about this, he said then, as Company G came in, we were the best-equipped company on the grounds. Our company had taken with them shelter tents. They had haversacks. They had all the eating utensils and things of that sort. And so he said there is very little danger at the presence with at that point, 3,300 soldiers, all well-armed and well-distributed over the sections where rioting might occur. And so then he goes on to talk about the fact that some of the people then went to sleep in the churches in Springfield, you know, to get out of any weather and all of that. And he said that they thought that it would be retained for another day or two, but maybe a little bit longer, depending upon how the circumstances were. But he said everything was, you know, was basically quiet. And then he describes Springfield. He said Springfield looks like a cyclone has struck it. And where he was, he said 20 to 30 houses in what he called the Tenderloin District. That was another name for this Badlands area.
Okay.
I think a Tenderloin was kind of a name that was given to a lot of the areas that were rough areas in the bigger cities. And so he said, you know, they look like there had been set afire, lots and lots and lots of them. A lot of men standing around on the street, and a lot of people in those neighborhoods were leaving town and getting out because they were afraid for their lives. And then other newspaper stories said that the black community was very concerned once the soldiers started to leave because they were afraid it would just regenerate itself and come back again and again and again. Fortunately, it did not, and the like. But then the soldiers came back to Effingham, and the surrounding communities. You know, when I'm talking about Effingham, I'm talking about the county, because these were soldiers who came from across the county. And so when all those came back to Effingham, they had stories to tell. They could connect people with this event in Springfield. They were a major role player in that Springfield riot. And so, again, all history is local when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
And so pick an event that has occurred, and chances are that somewhere in Effingham County, there's some family that can say, hey, my uncle was in that, or my dad was in that, or my grandpa was in that, or my great-grandpa was in that. With reference to that, I remember several years ago when we first started the museum, a lady brought to us her husband's military uniform. And so I asked her, you know, just for a breakdown on what, and she, this was a widow who brought this in. And as she brought this in, she said, well, my husband, she said, was in the service during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And he was in intelligence work. And she said he was stationed in Florida. And she said that he was, you know, keeping track of all of the intelligence information that came out of Cuba that was being intercepted by the United States government to make plans about what's going to happen next in Cuba. You know, how much of a threat is that? And so when she told me that story, I thought, you know, I remember that real plainly, because the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred when I was a sophomore in college. And I remember when that occurred, that I went to Eastern, and when that occurred, I remember that there was a statement that from the university that said, all young males can come to the student union tonight. We'll have TV set up in there, and we can watch the president together. We can watch President Kennedy speak and see what's going to happen.
Literally, history in the making.
Well, and it was important, they said, because in all probability, a lot of you are going to be drafted very shortly, because it looks like there could be a war that comes out of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, you know, and all of a sudden that just pops back in my mind. I'm thinking, oh, I remember that so very clearly. I didn't realize that we had people from Effingham County who were major in major roles in the intelligence community, you know, and were privy to all of those strategic plans that were being made, and how danger there was, and all that kind of thing.
It's crazy to think about it. Everything gets tied together in some way or another.
Yeah. So you know, and I guess the thought that we'd kind of leave with you, it would be this: that again, if it is accurate, and I believe it is accurate, that in the Western world, and especially in our country, that no person is more than four acquaintanceships away from any other person.
Yeah.
And you think about that, and I think I can verify that in my own life. See, a lot of things. And I'm going to digress here. I was in a seminar in Washington D.C. Back in 1979, and it was a special course I was taking through the University of Virginia, and we went into offices in Washington, into the major governmental offices. Walked into one office, and there were like a half a dozen of us who were from Illinois and went into that office. And the lady wanted to know where we were all from. And I said, I told her Effingham. She said, I never heard of that. She said, and everybody else with my group, they were all Chicago suburb people. And so she said, I never heard of Effingham. But she said, I've got an aunt who lives in a little town called Tutopolis, I think is the way you pronounce it.
Wow.
She said, do you know anything about that? And I said, well, I sure do. And then she named the lady, and I said, I know her.
Yeah, you never know from one person to the next.
Exactly.
Or who's connected where.
Yeah. Exactly, yes. But you know, that's what I found so fascinating about history, is all of these interconnectedness that we have, that we are connected with so many events, and in so many incredible kinds of ways. That's why I like to study family history. That's why I like to study history, period. But that's what we're trying to do up at the museum, is that we try to make people aware of all those connections that are out there. And so when people come into the museum, they know that, well, we might be in the middle of the country, away, way from all the major power centers or whatever else, but yet we're in the middle of, of it all, you know, and that we have those connections. So.
You never know where it might end up.
Exactly.